Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. He is presented by Audi Flatirons, and he joins us now. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing great, Joel. Would you go if Garrett Bowles is considered, you know, to be one of your top offensive line? Yeah. Okay.
Well, no, wait a minute. Why not? Isn't he playing better?
I mean, you don't pay guys because they're playing better, right? I mean, when you're that bad and you're playing better, that's a pretty low bar, right? Like, improvement is not the goal. Quality is the goal. And I think that's a very clear distinction. It has been an offensive line that has underperformed from the notion of an NFL average, if you will. And I think that they've been a below average offense in large part because of him. You've got to have a great tackle in order to be a great offense. And they don't have that.
Hey, Joel, do they have, in the college game, do they have like a pro football focus in the college game where people that have never played rate players and grade them?
Yes. Oh, it's actually like there's a section of PFF that does rate good players, yeah. Let me piggyback on that for a second. There's nothing against those guys, right? Like, they're doing the best that they can, but here's the problem, is they don't know what the coaching points of the concept are, right? Like,
right.
You have no idea by watching. For instance, there was an incompletion, and I'm blanking the exact down and distance. It was one of the last plays of the game, I believe. But N'Keal Harry kind of breaks in, Cam Newton throws the ball out, and it's an incompletion, and it looks terrible in the last game, right? You guys know the play I'm kind of talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
I can't tell you who's at fault in that play unless I talk with Josh McDaniels, right? Like, I can speculate all I want. But if I just say, like, well, Cam Newton's a veteran and N'Keal Harry is a guy that's even struggled last year, so that's a minus for N'Keal Harry, and it's just a neutral or a plus for Cam Newton. I don't know that. So
right.
It's like, okay, so I'm just giving an arbitrary grade at that point. So it's nothing about the acumen of football knowledge in general of these people making those ratings. It's that they just don't know what's been called. They don't know the coaching points of the offense.
You know, it's interesting because I was telling this, you know, I was talking to Brady. Yeah, exactly.
I'm all ears.
Right.
I'm all ears. Wait, hold on. Let me take a sip of coffee and go.
I'm talking to Brady. His hair was glorious.
All right.
It's just glorious.
Sure.
But we're talking about the not only the nuance, but the unspoken language that you have to develop between you and receiver. And, you know, you look at, and he didn't give any specifics, but you can look on tape and you can see, you know, a little spot or arrow route by the tight end where Brady throws him away from leverage. And the guy just stands there like maybe it's going to somebody else because you're not 100% sure. And you're looking at that going, dude, I am throwing you away from the leverage of the linebacker so he doesn't break on it and tip it away or just tackle you right away. And you can see it, but, you know, everybody and their brother's uncle says, well, Brady's old. He can't play anymore. Look at how inaccurate that, you know, and you're like,
that's
not the case. So that's the thing that always bothered me is you're grading things without the context of having a game plan put in front of you and what you're asking your players to do.
You know, so there you are sitting in front of him. His aura is around him and you're talking about communication with your ball placement. Get your head out of the gutter, first of all, Mike. And secondly, listen to what I'm about to say. Communication with your ball placement. When you are doing that, so he's talking about trying to communicate to the tight end what's happening behind the tight end. You do this against zone coverage, okay, versus man coverage. Everyone is just running, okay? So you're trying to exploit space with speed against man coverage, and you read the progression as such. But against zone coverage, what you're doing is usually you're reading a zone movement key, right? You're trying to bracket a defender or a zone high, low, or horizontally. Make that defender wrong. Now, what you're trying to do is throw checkdowns or some sort of outlet routes in zones that are adjacent to the zone that you're bracketing so that you can hold defenders and not allow them to cover both players that you're using to bracket the defender that you're reading. So it's the zone movement key. Well, when you do that, it's not necessarily a progression. You're trying to read the defense. And when you're reading the defense like that, what you're doing, because your player has his back to the defense and he's stopping and giving you his numbers in those little pockets or spaces, right? He's settling in the zone, as you hear us talk about all the time. He doesn't know what's going on behind him, where safeties are, where linebackers are. So you have to communicate to him through your ball placement, all right? That's why, like, if I've got a tight end over the middle and he's got somebody coming up over his right shoulder, I'm trying to throw the football on his or just off of his left shoulder. And basically I'm telling him, spin left. Right? Like run through that ball to the left rather than just like, oh, I'm going to throw it right in the middle of his chest and then we get tackled. I'm trying to buy 2, 3, 4 extra yards. Let's say that the 4 extra yards that we're getting are 5 extra yards. Let's say for sake of argument, over the course of the game, you get 10 zone coverages and completions where you communicate with your ball placement and you get 50 extra yards. Well, that's a massive amount of yards in the course of a game. That's a massive amount of yards. That's 5 first downs. See, so those are the nuances and critical things that really good players do, both at the NFL level and even at the college level, that make them elite. And if my tight end doesn't understand that, and he kind of floats towards his right, like, oh man, I'm open, Tom, throw it to me, and then he doesn't catch the ball, and I'm looking at him like, hey, moron, like I'm trying to communicate with my ball placement here and you're floating around like a jackass. And then all of a sudden some guy at PFF is like, Tom Brady's inaccurate. Well, that's a bag of garbage.
Visit with Joel Klatt. We love getting your perspective as a quarterback. So, all right, let's go into this one. The other day, Drew Lock throws that interception where Tim Patrick is running down the left sideline. There's obvious miscommunication. And Stank, you said it can come down to something as simple as right, reading.
Normally if you're even if you've stacked the corner, you throw the fade. If the corner stays on top of you in a cover one or any man type of coverage, he stays on top, you throw the back shoulder.
So Joel, right. As a quarterback, yeah. how many pass routes are built, the success or failure of that pass completion, that pass route, is based on both the quarterback and the receiver being able to correctly read what's happening. It's not just simply of, hey, here's the route, run it, and I'll throw it to you.
I mean, to some extent, every single, right? I mean, very rarely is there just what I would call a tank route. Even a post is going to have the ball placement is going to be affected by leverage. A go route, ball placement affected by leverage. Even a zone sit down route over the middle, again, like we just talked about, affected by leverage. That's why height in a quarterback is so advantageous, is because a lot of times short quarterbacks don't see that leverage and they have to feel it. And it's more innate for them. And that's why it's more difficult and more rare for the short quarterbacks to have success, even though we're seeing that at a much higher rate in the NFL now with Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and those guys. But to answer your question, almost every single completion, every single passing concept, there is some aspect of leverage that is affecting where you should throw the football, both the trajectory you should throw it with, and the direction and placement that you're trying to use as a quarterback. So, Mark explained it exactly right. If you're throwing a fade or a go ball, you know, the leverage of the man defender or corner is going to affect whether you're trying to put that ball more on a line on the back shoulder or if you're trying to throw it down the field and beat everyone with leverage if that player has stacked his defender.
Hey, real quick about Drew Lock. I contend that his numbers, like 10 of 24 for 189 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks, that the numbers were deceiving, that the eye test told me that he made, well, to use your term, big boy throws. I thought he had at least 5 or 6 big boy throws. What did you think of his performance?
No, I agree with you. I don't think his numbers you know, it's, I would categorize it the same thing as we talked about earlier. If you just look at stat sheet and numbers, I don't think you're getting the whole picture of that in the context of his performance either. So I agree with you, Mike. I thought that he made a couple of really nice throws. Early in the game, he made a beautiful throw down the right sideline. There was kind of two high safeties, and he threw a hole shot. Hole shot meaning you got a jam corner, you got a half safety, and you're trying to get it in between the two. You can't throw a looping ball down the field. That safety is going to get it. You can't throw a back shoulder because a jam corner is going to be sitting behind the wide receiver. So you got to throw this little hole shot. He did it beautifully down the right sideline. That was a big boy throw because that's a, you know, that's a, I think it was a left hash throw even. So I agree with you. I thought he made, I don't want to say several, but a few really nice throws. Part of the problem was I didn't think that the wide receiver core played well at all. And then, you know, it got into a game in which it was very clearly a protect the lead, special teams was going to win it. And that's a hard game to play as a quarterback because you don't, you're constantly out there just trying to protect the lead rather than going out there and trying to attack the defense. And I think that that's a problematic state to play the position in.
Let me ask you, 3:22 left and it's first and 10. Phillip Lindsay's been running the ball. You get in a three wides formation. You spread them. I think you're in a 3-by-1 and, you know, like a trips formation, and you end up running four verticals with 3:22 left and the lead. And Drew Lock throws a pick, and there's not like there is like I understand throwing an all go kind of special with a drive or you know some type of shallow cross, and you're trying to hit that shallow crosser. I get that. Why in the world would you call a four vertical route combination on in that situation?
I don't get it. I don't get it either. I think, to be honest with you, I don't understand why they weren't just playing the field position game. Because it was, wasn't it abundantly clear to you that New England, if they had to drive the length of the field, was going to struggle?
Yeah, unless Cam Newton right? just like, broke one for 50 yards on a scramble. Other than that, they had no offense.
They had no offense. Their personnel right now is decimated. You understand why Brady left, right? Like, watching that game, doesn't everyone be like, oh, yeah, it's pretty clear why Brady left. It's not just because he didn't like the, you know, environment in New England with Bill Belichick. It's like, he didn't have any offense around him. And that was pretty clear last week with Cam Newton. And to some extent, you have to, as the opposing team and the opposing offensive play caller, you have to not call the play that you want to play, but call the play and the concept that gives you the best chance to win. And I don't feel like that was that play call. I'm sure that they went back and in hindsight, Shermer was like, I've got to do a better job than that. I've got to maintain at least our ability to pin them back inside the 20 because I believe it was where the ball was. So I think they snapped it from like the 35. Does that sound about
25.
Right? 25. Okay. So like, let's say that you throw a screen or you run the football a couple more times, you punt it from the 30, 35 yard line. There's a good chance that you're going to pin them at least inside their own 25, guys. That's what the percentages would tell you. And then their chance of scoring was minimal from that standpoint, in particular, a touchdown. So, yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I think that's one of those things where it felt like grab baggy. It felt like a panicked offensive play call, and it's just like, well, you know, run four verts. It's like, oh, okay. And then Drew Lock makes a poor decision and throws a poor ball, forces it to Patrick, and it's picked off.
Visit with Joe Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. I think Tua is going to do taking over for the Dolphins.
Gosh, this is it. Guys, did it? Was it weird to you to see that?
Yeah,
like, come across on the scroll. I was like, wait, what?
I call
playing
well. I called the Miami game, and Fitz is, I mean, Fitz's deal. And of course, you got Chan Gailey back, and those two are simpatico. And I didn't think there was any way they were going to make this move anytime soon. And Brian Flores told me, hey, listen, man, if he's my own kid, I wouldn't start him. You know, he still needs to learn the offense. He still has growing to do. And, you know, and he's like, I still want to make sure that his hip is 100%. And, you know, being cleared to play, Joel, I mean, come on, as many concussions as you had, how many times have you been cleared to play where you probably shouldn't have played? Like, that's every game of my career, right? So I'm like, being cleared to play and being 100% are two entirely different things. This just feels like ownership saying, hey, we want to see our new toy. Let's go.
Well, and doesn't it feel like ownership seeing and feeling the reaction of Tua got out on the field and everyone freaked out, whether it was social media or the media themselves. And they're like, oh, Tua's on the field. What a great story. We all rooted for him, right? It was so positive. And it's so rare in this day and age to get something that seems unanimously positive, in particular on social media. And I feel like the ownership group or the, you know, executive branch of the Dolphins just said, like, nope, this is the direction we're going to go. And it didn't feel like Brian Flores at all. He has been patient, and their whole thing has been the long game. Think about it, right? Like, when he took that job, he took the long term, I don't know the exact numbers, but like the long term contract, the more guaranteed money, because everything was about the long run. And now they've got a team that is pretty good, and Fitz is playing really well. And we've seen across the NFL, in particular with some of the best quarterbacks that are young in the game, like, for instance, Patrick Mahomes waited for a whole year. Why? Like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I hope he succeeds. I really do. But I think that this makes the Dolphins a worse team because Tua is not going to perform at the level Fitz is performing at. And it puts him in a really bad position physically because you still have some question mark about the health of that. I mean, that hip injury was significant, to say the least. So I don't understand it. I really don't. I hope it works out. I really do because Tua is an amazing, amazing person, young man, and I hope that he has a lot of success. But this reeks of ownership getting involved in playing time decisions.
Could you have seen this happening with Patrick Mahomes when you were watching him back in college?
I remember sitting down and I did a Texas Tech Oklahoma State game, I think it was. Yeah, that sounds familiar. I don't know exactly. Maybe it was OU. But anyways, I was sitting with Patrick and we were just sitting in the building, and it wasn't like a formal broadcast meeting, so I didn't have anybody else around, which is my favorite thing. You know how I love people. So it's just me and Patrick, and we're sitting in the lobby at Texas Tech, and we were just talking. And, you know, that's when it struck me, when I just sat there and saw his personality firsthand, his confidence, the way he talked about football. And that was the first time when I was like, oh man, like this is not just a normal air raid quarterback, because that was the knock before, you know, he started having success, is that that offense hadn't generated a successful quarterback from college to the NFL. And when I sat with him, there was something about him that day that I just thought to myself, he gets it. Remember, his dad was a professional athlete. He has been around it. And it wasn't necessarily his play, because that was always ridiculous, you know, but it was just his understanding of what it was going to take. And I started thinking to myself, oh man, he might have a nice NFL future. But to answer your question, no, I didn't think that this was going to happen. And hey, by the way, no one did, or he would have been the first pick in the draft. That's what I think is so crazy about these type of hindsight deals, is people will come out of the woodwork like, I knew all along and blah, blah, blah.
But did you think he could be a good quarterback in the NFL?
I did. I was leery about the offense because he ran around so much, didn't throw the ball on time, just used his arm talent. And to me, I was a little nervous about that. Now, and I don't, forgive me if I've told this story before, but that was the draft in Philadelphia. And I was there, and I was there covering it for Fox. And we were put in the same hotel as the ESPN guys. And this is before Gruden went back to coaching. And so he's the draft analyst for ESPN. So I go down to breakfast one morning at the restaurant in the hotel, and sure enough, I had never met Gruden, by the way, but sure enough, I hear this, hey, Pat. And I look over, and he's literally giving me the one eyebrow up. And I'm like, what in the, like, I had no idea he knew who I was, anything. He's like, hey, man, come have some grub with me. And I'm like, okay. So there I am. I'm sitting down right there, and this is the morning of the first round, so it's Thursday morning. And he immediately, first question he asks, he's like, what do you think of Mahomes? And I'm like, that's weird. He's asking me about Mahomes. And so I start in. I was like, well, I'm nervous about this offense. I know Cliff did a little bit more from a concept standpoint and a personnel standpoint with him at Texas Tech. But that offense, and I go through the history, Tim Couch and the air raid, blah, 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 blah.
And he's like, oh man, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, guess what? And I'm like, what? And he's like, all of us who ever touched Favre, that's who we see. And he immediately goes, Andy's going to take him.
Really?
And I was like, oh, it makes so much sense at that point. It was, that's when I saw it, like for really clearly. And I was like, oh, he's absolutely right. And all of those guys that had Favre, that's who they saw, you know, and this wild, reckless gunslinger early in his career and out of college that Andy knew he could take a year, sit him behind a veteran and get him to play in a system that he could both utilize that aggressiveness and rein him in just a little bit. And so to answer your question in a really long-winded way, that's the first moment when I was like, oh my God, this is going to work in the NFL. Cause I had never made that comparison. And when Gruden told me that over breakfast, the morning of the first round, that's when I thought, okay, this kid's going to be a really good player.
That may have been your great, that may be better than the belt buckle you getting punched in the face story.
No. Getting beat up in Montana by the Cowboy continues to be his best story ever.
Well, it is because the end result was Joel got beat up by a Cowboy, but that breakfast story with Gruden, because I can see Gruden. I mean, I could just totally see, heck, I've been there at the draft with Gruden when he's like, yo.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Let's have a cup of coffee.
What do you think about Mahomes?
He goes, you're a you know what Gruden told me in the draft? He goes, I'll tell you what, man. He gave me one of them. He's like, went to a Alabama practice. Hey, you like that. It's like dinosaurs. He goes, then I went to Oregon practice. It's like a pillow fight broke out. He goes, yeah, it'd make you vomit. You know, that was our whole conversation. Anyhow. Hey, Joel, man.
I didn't even get it, man. Yeah. I didn't even get it. Here's the next part. That was the Trubisky draft, if you remember correct, right? That's when the Bears drafted for Trubisky. And he was like, you know, and then he asked me the same. So he goes through a bunch of guys. That was Mahomes. Mahomes was first. But then he was like, what do you think about Trubisky? And I was like, not sure, man. Hasn't played a lot of football. He goes, hey, you know what I see when I see Mitch? And I was like, what? And he goes, the guy would get you fired.
All right, Joel. You're the best. Joel. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one, guys.
Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flat Irons.